from newstalkzb.co.nz, it's the Mike Hosking Breakfast with BNZ.
G'day there, and welcome to the rewrap for Monday. All the best bits from the Mike Hosking Breakfast on Newstalk ZB in a sillier package. I am Glenn ZB, and this morning the Manus Island refugee Australia versus New Zealand divide, it's all very complicated. We've got to stop mowing our lawns for the sake of the environment, and uniforms are way too expensive. But before any of that, our anti-DHB crusade continues.
So Clark, in one of his opening moves as minister, has instructed the State Services Commission to get to the bottom of it. Of course, the disappointment to this point is the board haven't resigned, given it's the board who hired the CEO in the first place. Yet another failing of the public service ethos. No problem getting the salary, just don't want the responsibility that goes with it. Of course, I am hoping that this in some way leads to a more overarching view of how we run health generally, given the number of incidents now that involve errant boards, bad decision-making, wasted money, is mounting to the point where it's a joke, and all the energy that goes into this aspect of the overall operation is taking away the resource from the actual business of medicine. You know, patients, doctors, nurses. After all, what on earth is the State Services Commissioner really going to come up with? They should have checked. They should have been on top of expenses. Murray should have been more closely monitored. I mean, I can write the report for you now if you want. When you have 20 individual fiefdoms, you inevitably end up, given the talent pool in this country is so slim, and we make the idiotic choice of electing them, with buffoons running the zoo. And given that, what else can you possibly expect than the ever-increasing series of bad calls, cock-ups, mistakes and wastage that we're seeing? So the big question for Minister Clark is not what the report will say, but having seen what a mess it is, what is he actually going to do about it long term, and does he have the balls to sort it out properly?
If the Mike Hosking Breakfast achieves nothing in this life, it's going to bring down the DHB system as we know it. That's why Mike just keeps hammering away at it. And hammer away he did.
Just a quick note on Dr. Nigel Murray, because we're not going to let this one go. And eventually you're going to get David Parker, the Health Minister, on. He keeps coming up with these excuses that it's he doesn't have time, or it's not the right time, or he's on daylight saving time and we're not. I don't know what his excuses are, but he seems to. I'm available as of 3 a.m. every morning. Happy to ring him up at 3:05, do the pre-record, get it on later on the program. So I find it hard to believe he's not available at 3:05 in the morning anytime you like. But anyway, this guy Murray, lived for 6 months in taxpayer-funded accommodation with another person, spent double the $25,000 agreed to relocate him from Canada, spent $91,000 in the last financial year, travelled to New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Vancouver, Moncton, Montreal and Sydney, hired a rental car in Canada for a month. For a month. He was a no-show at a US conference he was invited to attend with 35 other New Zealand delegates, and so it goes on. So he's gone, he quit. And the board has been looking into it. You will never hear any of the details because they're citing privacy reasons, which is a mistake in the first place. The other mistake they've made is not resigning, because, of course, they hired the CEO, and what a catastrophe that turned out to be. So why at least the chair hasn't quit, I don't know. There is an investigation into it, but you know, as I mentioned earlier on in the program, what that report. I can write you the report right now if you want, a page and a half long. It's all you need. Save you the money, and it will go nowhere, do nothing, and achieve zero. So anyway, we hope between now and the end of the week to introduce you to the brand new health minister who may or may not have some answers.
So, yeah, like a Steve Jobs-style reality distortion field, Mike's going to keep saying that the health minister's going to do something about it, and then that will actually happen. I'm sure that's how life works. Life doesn't work very well at all for Manus Island refugees, and Jacinda Ardern wants to do something about it. Malcolm Turnbull, not so keen.
We can hardly blame Malcolm Turnbull for turning down our offer over the weekend for the 150 off Manus Island. It would make him look like he's got a problem he can't handle, which of course he sort of has. But what he can now say with real confidence is that since they started getting tough on boats, the boats have stopped. Now, is Manus Island your ideal scenario? Well, of course it's not. But as Malcolm Turnbull pointed out, the policy was taken that no boat people would set foot on Australian soil, and they've stuck to that. And in terms of taking an issue that was hopelessly out of control on the mainland under Julia Gillard and Kevin Rudd, it has been a success. Now, here is where we come in, and here is why our stance is so hopelessly naive. These people are illegals, of course. Are they refugees? Well, yes, they are. Well, most of them are, and that's the other part of the story, of course. How many aren't, and how many slip through? Do most flee circumstances that are horrific, and as such, is there an argument that we might want to help them out? Yes, there is. But there's a system. It's a United Nations system. We are signatories to that system, and as such, it behooves us to stick to the system. Why? Because the moment we don't, those who followed the rules and done the right thing get shafted. And why should they? The offer for the Manus refugees was going to be within our current refugee quota. So in other words, it's 1,000 minus 150 from Manus. So the 1,000 who lined up, dealt with the UN, did the right thing, followed the rules. 150 of those would have been told, tough luck, the illegals get to go to the front of the line. How is that even remotely fair? And that is the problem with these stories. The emotion and the noise over the, well, it overtakes the common sense and the rules. And the moment that happens, you set a dangerous precedent you can never walk away from.
Yeah, a few questions being asked today about exactly what Jacinda Ardern achieved by going over to meet Malcolm Turnbull over the weekend, other than just sort of annoying him slightly. I think that's... I mean, if that's what she was setting out to achieve, good job, I suppose. Lawn mowing. I'm against it, and so is this guy. He thinks it's bad for the environment.
The Americans are good at that. They run a longer lawn. You ever notice that? They run a much longer lawn. They still mow it. It's still neat, but it's much longer.
Yeah, to some extent, of course, America, you know, there's whole articles about, you know, the obsession that Americans have with lawns and how much, you know, there's almost like neighborhood police that go around and make sure that, you know, your neighbor's lawn is kept immaculately.
Yeah.
But it uses an enormous amount of resources. I mean, apparently, I just sort of looked up something about this, the amount of fuel, gas, you know, for maintaining lawnmowers and other sort of garden implements that's just spilled from servicing these machines is about 50% more than the entire sort of spill of the Exxon Valdez incident.
What a fascinating stat. Listen, Colin, I'm going to move it on, but I appreciate your time very much. Colin Merck, who's Research Associate with Landcare Research. I added the science element to that. I was reading this morning. Apparently, the fresh-cut grass, that smell you go, oh, fresh-cut grass, that interacts with the air pollutants, which makes allegedly the air worse. That's your scientific tip for the morning. From Dr. Hosking.
Surely, what more possible excuse do we need to never ever mow the lawns ever again? I'm going home to kill mine right away. Now, if we could just do something about the price of uniforms while we're at it.
Mike says the email, uniforms are a real scam. Kids' school one, you could buy trousers for, say, $20. These were deemed unacceptable as they did not have the school branding. To purchase with a school badge on, the trousers were $180. I find that hard to believe in the sense that, we've got some experience at our place, given we've got five of these kids. And the real issue, and this is what I can't understand Chris Hipkins is on about, and even he admitted on the program this morning, there's a bit of rumour and innuendo about it as opposed to hard facts. And even if you find hard facts, who decides what's a rip-off, what's gouging, and then what do you do about it? Who sets the margin? And so it goes. I don't know that this can possibly go anywhere. But what I've found as a parent of five children is that, of course, there are schools who change the uniform all the time. So they suddenly wake up. We had one school, new principal arrives, and they wake up one morning and go, I know, I'm going to change the school uniform. And so everyone goes, well, hold on. We just bought the one last year. What's happening there? And so they sort of have to phase it in. There's a cost. There are schools who have a ridiculous number of items in their school uniform. So in other words, instead of shorts and a T-shirt or shorts and a jersey or shorts and a sweatshirt or whatever the case may be, you've got your hat, you got your shirt, you got your tie, you got your jacket, you got your shorts, you got your culottes, you got your number ones, you got your number two, and so it goes. And then you got your winter, and then you got your summer, and then you got your
PE. How much would you expect to pay for a blazer?
It's a good question. No, it's a very good question, and it's always been one of those things where you go, geez, that sounds a bit pricey to me, but then it does last a long time. So you go down the blazer track. Well, see, if you go out and buy a sports coat, a bloke's sports coat, you're paying $500-$600, aren't you? So it's not going to be anywhere near that.
Yes, but presumably if you're doing that, it will be something that, I don't know, looks nice.
So there's not really a fashion element in there.
That you might wear more often than, I don't know, the six times a year that you actually have to wear your blazer.
That's true. One of ours has just been made a prefect. And so she's got she gets a prefect's tie.
I've got a head girl in my house now.
Listen to us. Listen, I've got a prefect. I've got a head girl. The highly educated. How did we produce successful children? Look at us. And somehow they came out. But what's a blazer cost?
$170.
Yeah, no, see, that's right up there. And that's for how many years, do you reckon? 2 years?
No, this is for the final year. This is just for
just for 1 year?
Yeah.
You see, there's your problem, isn't it? Anyway, I don't know what the government
is. There's a big second-hand market, I can assure you.
I bet you there is, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, good job doing well at school and everything. I'm not just... It seems like everything that you're successful at cost me more money. More instruments, more clothes, more uniforms, more travel, more accommodation. Success is overrated. I am Glenn ZB. That was the rewrap for Monday. I'll see you back here again when we'll wrap up some more success for you tomorrow.